हरि ही ओम सहनावतु सहनाभुनक्तु सहवीर्यंकरवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ओम शांति 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 ओम जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। भक्ति संदर्भ अध्याय 2 अधिकरण 1। भक्ति इज ऑल ऑस्पिशियस रिमूव्स ऑल सिंस एंड देयर रिएक्शंस। सो वी आर डिस्कसिंग विद श्रील जीव गोस्वामीज कमेंटरी ऑन दिस। Kramena means that the reactions are destroyed gradually from recent to previous, right? So it'll get rid of those immediate ones and then start going back. Because when you go to previous means you're going all the way back to, you know, when you first come into the material world. So, you know, you're going to start with what's now, what is the things that you're conscious of that you're giving up. Then you have to go into deeper and deeper into the principles of what it is that to be the controller and the enjoyer of the material world, right? So from recent to previous, and that goes from prarabdha to bija, to kuta and to aprarabdha. However, verse 21 mentioned that immediately the prarabdha karmas of the dog eater were destroyed rather than gradually. Footnote 13. Mukunda Goswami points out that there are exceptions to this rule. Ajamil eradicated the bija first, the upcoming suffering in hell. That is because the powers of the Lord's name are beyond rules. Okay. So, you know, it means, in other words, there's the standard way that it goes, but because the holy name is above the rules, and whatever holy name sees best, then he will destroy, you know, in the ways that it goes. So the bija is done first, because the prarabdha would be to hell, but the bija that caused, you know, would cause the going to hell, that was removed. Therefore, one should understand that prarabdha karmas will be destroyed in the manner of a needle piercing 100 lotus leaves. The needle appears to pierce the whole pile of leaves in one instance. Immediately, but actually it pierces one leaf at a time, gradually. Similarly, the karmas will be destroyed gradually, though from the perspective of the unlimited duration of the jiva's existence in the world, they are destroyed all at once. Thus, the contradiction between the two statements in verse 21 and the present verse is resolved, right? So is that it's destroyed immediately, means it goes from the one back, but it's just like when you have 100 lotus leaves, right? They're very thin, and you take a sharp needle and you push. Immediately, it goes through, but it's actually just doing one at a time when it's going through. But it happens very quickly. That's the power of bhakti, right? An illustration of bhakti destroying the seed of sin. Destroying the seed, footnote 14. The seed must be distinguished from the bija mentioned in the last verse, which is part of the sinful reaction mentioned in verse 18. The seed now being discussed is the second type of klesha mentioned in verse 18. Okay. An illustration of bhakti destroying the seed of sin, namely material desires, is found in the sixth canto. Although one may neutralize the reactions of sinful life through austerity, charity, vows, and other such methods, these pious activities cannot uproot the material desires in one's heart. However, if one serves the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead, he is immediately freed from all such contaminations. Srimad Bhagavatam 6:2.17. Srila Prabhupada. In this connection, Sukadeva Goswami speaks in the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, second chapter, verse 17, about the story of Ajamil, who began life as a fine and dutiful Brahmin, but in his young manhood became wholly corrupted by a prostitute. At the end of his wicked life, just by calling the name Narayana, Krishna, he was saved despite so much sin. Sukadeva points out that austerity, charity, and the performance of ritualistic ceremonies for counteracting sinful activities are recommended processes, but that by performing them, one cannot remove the sinful desire seed from the heart, as was the case with Ajamil in his youth. This sinful desire seed can be removed only by achieving Krishna consciousness. And this can be accomplished very easily by chanting the Maha Mantra, or Hare Krishna Mantra, as recommended by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In other words, unless one adopts the path of devotional service, he cannot be 100% clean of all the reactions of sinful activities. By performing Vedic ritualistic activities, by giving money and charity, and by undergoing austerity, one can temporarily become freed from the reactions of sinful activities. But at the next moment, he must again become engaged in sinful activities. For example, a person suffering from venereal disease on account of excessive indulgence in sex life has to undergo some severe pain in medical treatment, and he is then cured for the time being. But because he has not been able to remove the sex desire from his heart, he must again indulge in the same thing and become a victim of the same disease. So medical treatment may give temporary relief from the distress of such venereal disease. But unless one is trained to understand that sex life is abominable, it is impossible to be saved from such repeated distress. Similarly, the ritualistic performances, charity, and austerity, which are recommended in the Vedas, may temporarily stop one from acting in sinful ways. But as long as the heart is not clear, one will have to repeat sinful activities again and again. Another example given in Srimad Bhagavatam 6.1.10 concerns the elephant who enters into a lake and takes a bath very seriously, cleansing his body thoroughly. Then as soon as he comes onto the shore, he again takes some dust from the earth and throws it over his body. Similarly, a person who is not trained in Krishna consciousness cannot become completely free from the desire for sinful activities. Neither the yoga process, nor philosophical speculations, nor fruit of activities can save one from the seeds of sinful desires. Only by being engaged in devotional service can this be done. Right? So the important thing to note is devotional service clears all this. Whether the, you know, mechanics of it, how it's doing, what's the particular order, this and that, chanting the holy name is not dependent upon us, is not dependent upon gyan. So it's not dependent only if we understand it and it works. No, it works anyway. If one understands, has an appreciation, then one is more aware and more, open to, you know, applying oneself properly in various situations to avoid being, you know, implicated like that. That's then the principle that's given. But the holy name, the power of the holy name working, works whether we understand it or not. But that's the whole principle. You can say no, but unless you understand it won't, but it's not, this is not an intellectual process. This is the natural process of the soul, the natural process of the Lord's interaction with the living entity. Srila Jiva Goswami. This verse is quoted to show particularly the destruction of the seed, desires which cause sinful acts, which cause karma, which cause suffering. Right? You know, because that's the whole thing that goes back. That's the point that, when, because in the other, it's just that's the immediate thing what's causing the prarabdha, but it's actually the sinful desire, which come from I'm the controller and enjoyer. That's going to be, you know, the deepest root. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. This first shows how the seed acts as the cause, as a cause of sin. Puyante comes from the root pun, which means to destroy. Sins, heavy or light, referred to in the previous Bhagavatam verse, are destroyed by austerity, charity, and vows. The root, the subtle form of the sins, tad hridayam, arising from evil nature, is not destroyed by pious acts. The root, however, is destroyed by bhakti to the Lord's lotus feet, because bhakti destroys even the desires for sin. Okay, so that's the end of the discussion from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And we have Vritti. Having elucidated that bhakti effortlessly eradicates one's sinful tendencies, the subsequent Anucheda contrasts this with the process of jnana, highlighting that the same result cannot be achieved through the path of knowledge, right? So, in other words, like we were saying before, the discussion there, it's important because then one sees and one develops that faith in bhakti, that bhakti takes care of everything. And if by Krishna's grace one understands the technicalities and all that, and one can apply that or help others understand it, then that's very nice. But the point is that the jnana itself isn't what's effective. It's hearing about the glories of bhakti. And so that the glories of bhakti include removal of sin and all its features. There, that's then going to be the glory of bhakti. That's going to be the purifying effect from hearing about it and discussing it. It's not that because I mechanically understand it, now it works. It's just like your digestion works whether you understand it or not. You know, understanding it, then you may do things that won't create trouble, but it doesn't make your digestion work. That's the whole, that's one has to be very clear. Anucheda 127. O King, a sinful person cannot become purified by austerities and other processes to the extent that the devotees who offer their lives to Krishna become purified by service to the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.1.16. The commentary says, well, this verse explains that bhakti is superior to jnana. Jnana does not purify this, purify sin to the same extent that a person who has offered his life to Krishna purify sins by serving the Lord. End quote. Previously, jnana was mentioned as a means of atonement. Quote, completely counteracting sin is not all possible, not at all possible, by performing atonement, for the sin is committed out of ignorance. Real atonement is attaining jnana, right? So here that point is, but the jnana is knowledge of bhakti. It's not the mechanical knowledge itself that is working. It's the chit shakti, in that we are discussing about the Lord and his glories and his processes and all this, means bhakti and his shaktis. That's the point that's there, right? So because it says real atonement. So if it's a real atonement, it must be real jnana. Atonement may be by jnana, but real atonement is real jnana. Then Indra's sin for killing Vritra was canceled by meditation on the Lord. Quote, when the reaction to the offense of committing sin on the strength of atonement was destroyed by meditation on the Lord, Indra was invited back to Swarga by the Brahmanas. The sin of killing a Brahman, depleted of its strength by Shiva, guardian of the northeast, could not overcome him, since he was also protected by Lakshmi, who lives in the lotus. Right, because he went, you know, so he was hiding in the lotus because the lotus then represents Lakshmi, so she took shelter of the Lord's internal potency to meditate upon the Lord. Right, because then here when he was meditating, he was living inside the lotus flower in, I think it was in Manasarovar. I think it was Manasarovar. And I think Bindu Sarovar, that was Kasyapa. No, Kardama. That was where he was meditating. So, and then from that, then becoming purified of the sin of killing a Brahmin and all the reactions thereof, then the demigods are inviting him back to Swarga to, you know, continue. Oh, no, he's actually by the Brahmanas, yeah. That was Srimad Bhagavatam 6.13.17. Then the next verse, O King, the Brahmana sages approached him and had him properly perform a horse sacrifice along with worship of the Supreme Lord, 6.13.18. The performance of the horse sacrifice was for common people who believed that the horse sacrifice was the atonement. Like, remember, Jiva Goswami was explaining before that the devotee, that he has no interest in all these fruits of activities because he has no faith in them that they'll purify, uplift, or anything like that. And so you know, he doesn't need to get involved. Though we might see the Brahmin, Grihastha devotee might be involved in the activities but he's doing that in his service to the Lord. But the common person will think, yes, he's a proper Brahmin, he's purified, he's in a good state because of all this. When in actuality, it's because he's a devotee and he's remembering the Lord and serving the Lord. So, quote, how could the killing of Vritta, who was a great devotee of the Lord, having prema, can be atoned for by worship of the Lord? A great offense is destroyed only by experiencing its effects or by the mercy of the Lord, end quote. So this will be a, what do you call it? Doubt, you know, will be coming up. So then the Acharya speaks, there was no fault in Indra since he was inspired by the Lord. Thus, worship of the Lord was the atonement. Vritra's killing was instructed by the Lord in order to remove his demoniac nature. Thus, there is no fault, right? So then whatever was there to purify Vritra, then the Lord arranged it. But because Vritra was a pure devotee, therefore then meditating on the Lord, he went back to Godhead. And Indra, then inspired by the Lord, instructed by the Lord, following that, then, you know, he's purified. Sukadeva spoke thus. Vritti, after illustrating the destruction of aparabdha karma through the practice of bhakti, the following anucheda explains how bhakti, when desired by the worshipper, can also sometimes eliminate aparabdha karma. Now, also what's interesting here is that the way the vritti is mentioned, after illustrating the destruction of aparabdha through the practice of bhakti, the following anucheda, and what they were discussing was about the desire. So it appears that the the aparabdha appears to be the also that element of just desiring having material desire, and the kutaj is the impressions that one has of the material world and how it could be enjoyed or it has been enjoyed. It means that either you've enjoyed, it has a thumb scar. Someone else is enjoying, that creates a thumb scar. Someone else talks about how you could enjoy this, that creates a thumb scar. So at some point, then if we take seriously that and meditate upon that, you know, like Krishna says in the Gita, if you meditate upon the objects of the senses, then one becomes attached to them. So that is becoming attached, then that brings it to that goal. So then you want to act. So then that creates the bija. And so that bija, then now that will grow into parabdha karma. So it appears that the taking this back, that we're talking about two aspects, that bija then means parabdha is the karma that you're experiencing. But then the aspect of the bija, then it has the element of that a particular desire, you know, seed has been sprouted, and it will grow into a bloom into a plant, giving the fruit of the misery that's there. And because that's also given, that it's talked about as a plant, and that there is that this kind of discussion. But at the same time, is we know that it's all going to be based on deeper than that, is that those seeds sprouting and manifest are going to be coming from the impressions that are coming from the actual desire to enjoy separately from Krishna. So, in this case, because the Acharya is in the last Anucheda, then we're talking about, you know, bija, but from two angles, bija being the, you know, actual seed that sprouted, you know, and then will continue. Because just like if parabdha is what's going on now, if that's removed, then, you know, even the plant that's growing will be removed. But then it goes back to the impressions. You know, it said kutaj, then it goes back to the impressions. And the kutaj then is, you know, what you would consider as your, you know, store or stock of ideas on how you could enjoy in the material world. So all the things that the mind thinks about and contemplates and all that, that itself, what it's contemplating, that's the kutaj. So it'll remove that. Then it will go back and remove prarabdha, which means, you know, future sins that haven't happened because, you know, you haven't thought about them enough to get involved in them, but they're all there. You follow, you come into the material world, the whole gamut is there. If, you know, it is said that one who comes, who's actually come to the point of Shraddha, you know, and taking up the pure devotional service, that path, then they've been through all the species of life. And, you know, and here all, you know, whether it means all 8,400,000 or has, you know, been around the block a bit and, you know, enough to go, this is stupid. You know, why I want to be happy, I'm suffering. So the point is that, you know, the whole, how the living entity is 8,400,000, because a living entity can go through any of them. It's all there. In other words, the package is 8,400,000 species, and then you have, you know, that combined with the, what do you call it, the 14 planetary systems, and then there you have your particular, whether it's on the coastline, whether it's on the fields, whether it's in the hills, whether it's in the mountains, whether it's in the forests and jungles, you know, so all these different elements are there, or yeah, of course, whether it's in the water. So then all these different elements are all what's there as the options, you know, from the primary creation. All of that has been created, and how each one of them functions, its nature that is unchangeable, how, you know, what are the positions of everything, how they're going to move through these things, you know, and the birth after birth that they'll take, there's orders that they take. Then the human being then can, you know, either avoid the inappropriate activities or be engaged in the recommended activities and elevate the consciousness and go back to Godhead and go out. And this way, then everything is clear, right? Then there's no problem because it goes back like that. So we see is that sometimes a word can have a general meaning and a specific meaning in the Vedic means. The Vedic will use like that. Generally, the modern, at least in English, they try to avoid that, though it's not that they don't use it. But, you know, just the example generally given that would give is that, you know, yeah, just like cooking, you know, this is another example, that cooking is a general principle. And then when you're cooking a specific preparation, it's still called cooking, right? You know, so someone could say, who doesn't understand it, could go, but, you know, I thought you meant cooking was everything, you know, all the different things, the principles of it and all that. But here you're specifically doing one thing. How is that the whole of cooking? No, cooking's the principle. So whichever one are being used at the time. So in the same way as you have all the principles of trying to control and enjoy the material world, the dharma, arta, kama, and moksha, you know, and all the, then the living entity has those options, then which ones you're doing at present, that's then going to be, you know, the ones that are the prarabdha that you're functioning in, the scenarios you're functioning in, and performing the actions, you know, that are going to give your next immediate, you know, the next prarabdha karmas, like that. So that we're good, yeah, and all that. Yeah. Okay. Anucheda 128. Bhakti destroys prarabdha sins sometimes. Yeah, because remember before it was mentioned that prarabdha is removed and all that, but at the same time as having been born into, you know, as the example was given, into the qualified Brahmin family or into the Chandala family, that's prarabdha karma. But even though he's performing bhakti, he still has the body and the, you know, social standing, you know, or social identity is having come from those backgrounds, right? That's why we can say is, yes, he's a Brahmin, you know, from the Brahmin family because of that Prarabdha karma, or yes, he's that Chandala devotee because of that background. So that means there's some Prarabdha maybe there. So that's why he says, sometimes, right? Yan nama jaya shravanan nu kirtanad yad prahvanad yat smaranad api kvachit shvadopi sadyas savanaya kalpate kutaf punaste bhagavan nudarshanat. By hearing or chanting your name, by offering respects to you, by occasional remembrance of you, even the dog eater immediately becomes qualified for performing the soma sacrifice. O Lord, what then to speak of the person who sees you? Srimad Bhagavatam 3:33-6. So here it's mentioning the soma sacrifice, right? So before it was sacrifices, you know, so that means, you know, the Brahmin does daily, his daily yajnas, you know, I mean, the proper Vedic Brahmin, he does yajnas every day. When I say, that at the marriage ceremony, the fire is performed. That fire, the coals from that fire are then kept by the Vedic Brahmin and taken to his house. And that is used for the yajna going on in his house, right? And so, you know, one, you have to be very aware, you have to always be, you have to take care very nicely. And then, you know, he's doing that on a daily basis. Then there's going to be, you know, performance of samskaras, there's going to be the bigger, you know, yajnas. And then we have, you know, the soma yajna. Now, the soma yajna is the yajna that setting up takes 9 months. Then I think the performance of it may take the balance, you know, the year, whatever it is. You can do one in a year, right? And the person, the yajaman, has to be very qualified. They have to actually have 3 years of stockpile of grains and foodstuff to be able to perform it, right? You can say, but, you know, why do we need to have so much hoarded? Because basically, he's going to give all that away to the Brahmins and feeding the Brahmins and giving gifts to others and taking care of everybody during that sacrifice. So in other words, what it takes to have all that, that's what he's going to expend on it. And, you know, only special Brahmins who, you know, been initiated into that, they can do. And, you know, it goes on. There's also the point is that someone in the Soma Yajna, there's also rules you can only perform the Soma Yajna or be part of the Soma Yajna if you've been, you can only perform it as the head priest if you've been part of one before. Right? So it has to be handed down. So there's someone who they're qualified to do the Soma Yajna. Then he has so many assistant priests with him. So if you've been an assistant priest in a Soma Yajna, then, you know, naturally you can take part, continue, but then at some point you could lead doing the Soma Yajna, right? So the last, I forget what it was, I think it was in the 80s, the last Soma Yajna that could be performed by qualified Brahmins from that Vedic rule was performed. Now you can't do it because there's no Brahmins that have the qualification. It's done, right? You know, but it's saying that he can do a Soma Yajna, right? So that means he has that qualification that he should respect it on a platform of a Brahmin who is qualified to lead the Soma Yajna. And then if, you know, whatever it is, then having gotten his Vaishnav Diksha and that, then he could take up performing sacrifice and all that. But the point is, you know, as Vaishnavs, why would we be engaged in so many yajnas? Because those are very karma, you know, kanda. Those are kamyakas. Those are not, something like that goes on, like what we would do, like some scars or marriage, something like this and that. So he's qualified to do that, means on the level of his purity and consciousness, but he's not going to be interested in that. He's just going to do the other activities. Now, if he was from a family of Brahmins who did Soma Yajnas and all that, and it's a very Vedic cultural environment is there, like we see in previous times, then if that's what's expected, that's his family duties, he would be performing those sacrifice for those qualified Yajamans and everything. And so people would be thinking because he's doing that, that's his qualification. But no, actually it's, he's been trained. It's actually because he's a devotee. That's the whole point that's being pointed out is that. And so this is then being pointed out. This is one who hears, chants your name, offering respects by occasional remembrance of you, right? He hears chanting the name, offering respects to you by occasional remembrance of you. This, he's not, means he's not even, then he becomes qualified, right? Let alone one who has seen the Lord, right? What is there? What position are they? If it's here, they've done the Soma Yajna and that, that will elevate you up to, the heavenly planets, definitely. And then, you're doing the Ashwamedhas or this or that, you can become Indra or very pious. So the pure devotee who has seen the Lord, their position in the universe, there isn't anyone higher. There isn't anyone higher. Brahma, Shiva, in the demigods, they would respect such a person. That's the thing. They would respect such a person. Even though they're highly elevated and, very respectable, it means the devotees are all respecting those in the line. So we're respecting because the person's Brahma, right? But his, real qualification for us is that he's a devotee of the Lord. Right? Okay. Udriti, Śrīla Prabhupāda. Herein the spiritual potency of chanting, hearing or remembering the holy name of the Supreme Lord is greatly stressed. Rupa Goswami has discussed the sequence of sinful activities of the conditioned soul and has this established in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that those who engage in devotional service become freed from the reactions of all sinful activities. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. The Lord says that he takes charge of one who surrenders unto him, and he makes him immune to all reactions to sinful activities. If by chanting the holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one becomes so swiftly cleared of all reactions to sinful activities, then what is to be said of those persons who see him face to face? Right? Another consideration here is that persons who are purified by the process of chanting and hearing become immediately eligible to perform Vedic sacrifices, right? So the first point is that, the main point is that about the, that one simply by hearing about the Lord, chanting his name, remembering the Lord, just by that one comes to this elevated platform, right? So that's the actual main point is that, and then someone who's seen face to face, then you can't even calculate their position. Okay. Generally, only a person who is born in a family of brahmanas, who has been reformed by the 10 kinds of purificatory processes, and who is learned in Vedic literature is allowed to perform the Vedic sacrifices, right? So here is that he's been born, he's been reformed by the 10 kinds of purificatory processes. So that means that he's gotten his upanayanam, and then, to lead these things, he's going to be, generally speaking, he's going to be a married person, but even if not, they're proper brahmacharis in the ashram working under the guru and trained in these things we see in the Bhagavatam. I think it's also possibly in sixth canto that there is the point being made that maybe it was Prithu Maharaj, someone was performing a sacrifice, and one of the uniquenesses of the sacrifice is the priests were all unmarried. They were all brahmacharis. And so it's pointing that out, Prabhupada pointed out, because they're not married, their focus will be very, very good. And so then the exactness of everything will be very nicely done, like that. So you know, whatever it is, but they've gone through the purificatory rites, they've learned the Vedic literatures, you know, so that means they've learned those things both because in learning the Vedic literatures, you learn them and then you have to practice them. So even if you learn the Vedic rituals themselves, you have to practice and do all these things. So only with all that, he's born, he has the first birth, he has the second birth, and he's been trained, right? In the Vedic, then he can perform the sacrifice. So we're equating. So here, but it says, but here the word sadyaha, quote unquote, immediately is used, right? So we're equating that level of purity and qualification is where the person who just starts, you know, and has that faith, is committed, is positioned, right? And Sridhar Swami also remarks that one can immediately become eligible to perform Vedic sacrifices, right? That was that quote before that Jiva Goswami gave, quoting from Sridhar Swami, that he becomes immediately qualified means his position should be respected on the level of one who is at that point. Maybe he's gone through the Vedic reformatory rites or not, or, you know, learned the Vedic things or not. That's secondary. The point is he's on that platform of qualification. That's the main thing. And then if to do them, yes, then he would go through the right, you know, he would get Upanayanam. He would get the Pancharatra Diksha Upanayanam, be trained in the subject and could do. But the point is you Adhikara means is you have the potential there. You have that qualification. The character is there and everything. Then it has to be, you know, developed till it's practical, just like the Brahmin has the Adhikar to study the Brahminical subject matter. But only once he's studied it, then he'll be classified as someone who has, just like he's a Brahmana. Then he becomes a Vipra when he knows these things, right? And so that's why then that verse, Kiba Vipra, Kiba Nyasi, Shudra Keni Nyoi. So there he's comparing the devotee to the Vipra, means the Brahmin who has been trained and is qualified, right? So, you know, you're always making these points because the principle is the main thing. And then the secondary mechanical details, those are in support of establishing the point. A person born in a family of the low caste, which is accustomed to eat dogs, is so positioned due to his past sinful activities, right? He's there because of he's done nonsense in the past. You don't take birth in the family of dog eaters unless you've done some nonsense. Now, whether that nonsense is direct sinful activities or offense, because it's also by offense to the Vaishnavas, you know, or to the devotional process like this, that one can be born in the family of, you know, a low-grade family. You know, even if one hasn't, but the standard is naturally these go together. But by chanting or hearing once in pureness or in an offenseless manner, he is immediately relieved of the sinful reaction, right? Just once hearing. So if he's hearing just very nicely, because sometimes it'll be said, no, but that means he has to be pure devotee, this, that. We'll re-qualify because we have such an attachment to the importance of piety and sin and the power of piety and sin. I mean, material piety and sin as defined by the particular culture that you're working in or religion that you're working with. Background before becoming devotional service, that one can't tolerate that simply this person hearing very nice or without offense, like someone sits in the class, hears nicely, is not going, oh, that's nonsense or this or that. I can never agree with that. But he's just listening nicely and all that and appreciating and all that. Their sins are removed. Right? And that. But now you can see, but we see him continue on. One, that's by habit. And two, he continues by habit. Then he's doing and then he keeps doing these things. And so he is a sinful again. And then when things get out of hand, then he may come back in the association of devotees here again. It's like Ajamil, he's chanting his son's name because it's his son's name. That's it. You know, he's not chanting because of something else. He's chanting because it's his son's name. But once he chants the son's name and that and the situation, then he remembers how, by the power of the Lord's name, even though he chanted it in Namabath, power of how when he was young, he used to worship the Lord and everything like that. Then he remembered the Lord Narayan himself. But the initial point where he's, you know, saved from the Yamadutas is just because he chanted the name. We have to understand the power of the name is great. It's not about us. It's about the name. And that we've connected and taken part in that, then the Lord and the name, you know, then reciprocate. So that's the whole, because that's the natural position of the living entity. Then it continues on. Not only is he relieved of the sinful reaction, but he immediately achieves the result of all purificatory processes. Just by sitting in that class hearing, or you're standing on the side of the road when the Harinam goes by and hears nicely and appreciates, you know, or the Harinam stops and then, you know, sometimes after a crowd, then they explain a little philosophy, try to get people to chant and all that. The position of that person is unique, because what living entities in this universe packed with living entities, you know, I mean like packed. And so then how that they have now chanted, and now they're actually, you know, through Agyata Sukriti now on that path, you know, to actually go back to Godhead, when all of the living entities are just moving around and doing nonsense, right? Even though they may be engaged in devotional activities by the recommendation of the scriptures, or just by habit from having done that in pious lives, that they do proper activities, but they don't attribute it to bhakti. They don't see it as a spiritual activity. They see it as karma and gyan, so they don't get the credits for that. They just keep going around and around and around. Taking birth in the family of a brahmana is certainly due to pious activities in one's past life. But still, the child who is born in the family of a brahmana depends for his further reformation upon initiation into acceptance of a sacred thread and many other reformatory processes. But a person who chants the holy name of the Lord, even if born in a family of chandalas, dog eaters, does not need reformation. Right? You know, so simply by chanting Hare Krishna immediately becomes purified, becomes as good as the most learned Brahmin. Right? Means on the platform of purity. He may not have that technical knowledge is there. That he has to learn. But the position of purity means the Brahmin, by studying the scriptures, becomes purified by his austerities, by his charity, by his performances. He becomes purified. You know, that's where he says all processes. He says, and many, oh, what is it? No, the results of all purificatory processes. It doesn't say some. All is the word used. And so that means he's on that level of purity. In fact, he's past it. It's just to give an idea. You know, it's just to give an idea. So he doesn't need the reformation to be on that platform of purity. Now there is Vaishnav reformation that you go through. I mean, if one's, you know, small, one goes through the samskaras arranged by the parents, all in connection with worship of Krishna. And then, or as an adult, he takes a Vaishnava initiation. He goes through that aspect. And then he's going to, you know, perform devotional services, sadhana, and everything like this. So the devotional service itself is the reformatory process. He doesn't need any other reformatory process. You know, as we see, I'm not sure if it'll mention here, but Sukadeva Goswami, you know, he didn't go through these activities, but he's already on that platform of Paramahamsa, right? So continuing, Sridhar Swami especially remarks on this connection, anena pujatvam lakshyate, Some caste brahmanas remark that by chanting Hare Krishna, purification begins. Of course, that depends on the individual process of chanting. But this remark of Sridhar Swami's is completely applicable if one chants the holy name of the Lord without offense. Right? So, as it said, you know, it'll start, and they'll accept that, but he's pointing out that if it's chanted without offense, it will give that full reformation. Because we're only talking about brahminical reformation means it's on, basically you can say it is the position of you know, what is the purpose? In other words, the Brahman, his purpose of doing all that is to become more and more purified, more and more realized, till when he surrenders to Krishna and takes up devotional service. So this person's already started devotional service. So he's actually attained the benefit that Brahman got through all those activities. Right? So that's going to be there. So yes, as the smarta points out is that or the caste Goswami points out is that, I guess they're all caste. Yeah, I guess they're smartas and caste Goswamis are all, yeah. Okay. That it begins the process. Okay, they can say the holy name, it begins, because they know Shastra talks about this. But the point is, if it's without offense, then it completes that process. Now, that only clears of those, you know, impediments, to the degree that one could continue the process. If one's not interested, one, you know, go back into what everyone was doing before. If one's interested, then one takes up the association, right, from Shraddha to Sadhana Sangha, and moves forward in devotional process. Right? So, yeah. Okay. But the remark of Sridhar Swami is completely applicable if one chants the holy name of the Lord without offense. For he immediately becomes more than a Brahman, right? Because here the point is it's more than a Brahman, because it's on the transcendental platform. It's on the spiritual platform. It's on the devotional platform, which is beyond the brahminical platform. Brahminical platform goes up to Brahman, right? It's you know, secondary perfection is mukti. Its primary perfection is taking up devotional service and then getting the effect of the primary position. As Sridhar Swami says, pujyatvam, he immediately becomes as respectable as a most learned Brahma and can be allowed to perform Vedic sacrifices. If simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord, one becomes sanctified instantly, then what can be said of those persons who see the Supreme Lord face to face and who understand the descent of the Lord as Devaki? Devahuti understands Kapila Dev, right? So they're in an even more amazing position. So that's why we're hearing from them. The position of just having heard the holy name from the proper devotees and all that, you know, or at least in that line that we've heard, and then the purification that comes from that can bring you to a position greater than that of a Brahman in purification. So let alone, you know, hearing from all these great personalities like Devahuti in their pastimes with the sun, all these other great personalities, Sukadev Goswami, Vyasadev, Vidura, the Pandavas, you know, all the great kings and all that, Prahlad Maharaj, you know, and the residents of Vrindavan and Dwarka, and then Chaitanya Charitamrita and Navadvip, then their position is even, you know, more wonderful. So hearing from them, we get their association, and that way brings us closer to that service. Usually, initiation depends on the bona fide spiritual master who directs the disciple. If he sees that the disciple has become competent and purified by the process of chanting, he offers the sacred thread to the disciple, just so that he will be recognized as 100% equal with the Brahmana, right? So that he offers them the sacred thread. So it's only there that others will see him as 100% equal with the Brahman, right? That was Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's point. So that's why we wear it, So we're wearing it for that purpose. So for us, it's not a matter of giving up varna, you know, in sannyas. Like you see, the Mayavadi sannyasis don't wear a thread. But for us, it's that it's just to establish the point that the Vaishnava is 100% a Brahmin. And so then for us, it's preaching. And it's also just part of the purgatory rite, you know, with the Pancharatrik sums, you know, that we're going through with the Vaishnava initiation. This is also confirmed in the Hari Bhakti Vilas by Sri Sanatana Goswami. Quote, as a base metal like bell metal can be changed into gold by a chemical process, any person can similarly be changed into a brahmana by diksha vidhana, the initiation process, end quote. Right? So, you know, we have to understand is that these aren't just sentiments, we're just not saying them. These are actually real. It's based on the faith in devotional service. So this may not be understood by the caste Goswamis, because for them, it's not about devotional service. That is their qualification. So therefore, it's an area that they can't speak on, you know, because they know scriptures, they'll of course want to be seen as an authority that can speak in that area, but it's not their discipline. So, you know, that would be wrong. Just like someone not trained in, let's say, Jyotish or, you know, like that, and then comes into an assembly of Jyotish and then has his opinion and this and that. It's not his discipline. He may be great in, you know, in the yajnas or in Vastu Shastra or something else, but not in this. You know, so therefore, you know, you have to know there. So the Smartas, the caste Goswamis, it's not that bhakti is not their forte. So they shouldn't be making such strong comments against the devotional process. It is sometimes remarked that by the chanting process, one begins to purify himself and can take birth in his next life in a Brahmin family and then be reformed. Right? So that, of course, is generally going to be brought up by the caste Goswamis, or at least people who have faith, but generally they're the ones who bring this up. But at this present moment, even those who are born in the best Brahmin families are not reformed, nor is there any certainty they're actually born of Brahmin fathers, right? Because the point is the father, is he practicing? You know, if he's working, if the father's working in IT and his father was working in the railroad, then how can we even say that they're Brahmins? They're born in that family, yes, it has that lineage and everything. You know, so yes, socially it's going to be a good birth, and that could socially be acceptable, but in reality is, you know, are they performing all the samskaras? Are they performing all from Garbhadham right through up to, you know, Jatikarma up to Upanayanam, and then actually practicing it? You know, that they, once they get Upanayanam, they're chanting their mantra three times a day and, you know, doing all the different things of consideration and all that. You know, how many are doing, right? That's the point. So you can say, yes, but there are Brahmins like that. Yes, there are, but generally you see that they're seriously practicing. They're generally connected with major temples and things like this and you know, living that lifestyle. But even then, whether they went through all the samskaras or not, that's another thing. Formerly, the Garbhadhan reformatory system was prevalent. But at the present moment, there's no such Garbhadhana or seed-giving ceremony. Under these circumstances, no one knows if a man is factually born of a Brahmin father. Right? Because technically, that's why it says in the age of Kali, everyone is born Shudra. Prabhupada points out it's because of this point. They're not actually born through Garbhadhana. And you don't actually can say whether the Brahmin is father is factually a Brahmin, because factually means a practicing Brahmin who is pure because of his, you know, because of his qualifications of, you know, his birth in the Brahmin family, his reformatory processes, and his study and practice of the scriptures. And so if those three aren't there, then how can you say that this child is also of that quality, you know, potential. So that's why it says in Kali Yuga, everyone's born Shudras. That's right. But if they perform Garvadana and this and that, then they're not, right? Whether one has acquired the qualification of Brahman depends on the judgment of the bona fide spiritual master, right? So then he can say whether it's there, right? Because it's about Brahmana means who knows Brahman, which means knows Krishna. He bestows upon the disciple the position of a Brahmana by his own judgment. When one is accepted as a Brahmana in the sacred thread ceremony under the Pancharatrika system, then he is Dvija, twice born. All right. So it means under the Pancharatrika system. That's how we're the Vaishnavas use it. It means if you're a Brahmin family or Dvija families, and these have come as just the course of the samskars, then they'll have had the thread beforehand, you know, before coming in contact with the spiritual master and taking Pancharatrika Diksha. But otherwise, then it's from the Vaishnava Diksha. It's already acknowledged that the Vaishnava Diksha already includes the second birth, because it being third birth, it already includes the second. That is confirmed by Sanatana Goswami. Dvijatvam jayate. By the process of initiation by the spiritual master, a person is accepted as a Brahmana or a Dvija in his purified state of chanting the holy name of the Lord. He then makes further progress to become a qualified Vaishnava, which means that the Brahminical qualification is already acquired. Right? So as he becomes qualified as a devotee, then that Brahminical qualification is already there. Right? And then if he wants to, you know, perform deity worship or perform a sacrifice and that, then it's just a matter of some training and association. And then, you know, they can easily do that. That's not the point, because he has that purity, right? Because he makes further progress. I mean, already he starts at the place of a purified Brahma and then makes further progress. So he sees that, because you're going beyond mukti, you're going to bhakti, you're going to anandamaya. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam 333.6 purport. Then the next point. Aho bhata swapacho to, no. Aho bhata swapacho to gariyan yajji vagre vartate nama tubhyam te pus tapas te juhuhus stasnur arya brahmanuchur nama krinati ye te. How astonishing, the outcast on the tip of whose tongue your name appears becomes the guru. All those who chant your name become most respectable, have completed all austerities, all sacrifices, all bathing, and all study of the Vedas. Right? Yeah. Yeah. So that's the point, is the outcast, because he's chanting the holy name, they become guru, right? Because they're teaching people about Krishna, how to serve Krishna, the glories of Krishna, getting them to chant the holy name. So in this way, then they're guru. Right? It means, in other words, whether they have disciples or not, whether they're seen and accepting interaction with others based on this principle or not. But the point is they can set example and give instruction that all can benefit from. Right? That's the... Okay, so then we'll end here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai.